Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on fintech, what it means, and how it is impacting collections. Fintech is a word that gets thrown around a lot these days, but what it means and how it has actually impacted the collections industry may not always be so obvious. We're fortunate today to have a panel of experts in this very area who are here to share their insights and perspectives into this exciting dynamic that is reshaping the collections industry. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Solutions by Text. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use as a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. At least that's what my mother tells me. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Jonathan Harbin is the Chief Information Officer at Frost Arnett. Jonathan and his team are responsible for managing the ever-increasing amount of data flowing through the company. Before joining Frost Arnett, he worked in technology-related fields at Nashville-based healthcare companies for more than 10 years. Jonathan earned a bachelor's degree in information technology from Middle Tennessee State University and is a certified information systems security professional. Matt Kiefer is Chief Officer for Information Development and Compliance for the Preferred Group of Tampa. He is a past president and current vice president and education chair of the Florida Collectors Association. He served on the board of the National Healthcare Collectors Association and was a member of HFMA and MGMA, and is also an ACA scholar and fellow. He has been in healthcare and collections since 2001. Matt enjoys shooting, MMA, CrossFit, and politics. He is also not known for being politically correct. Can't wait for that to rear its head during the webinar. Ohad Samet is the co-founder and CEO of TrueAccord, a company using machine learning and behavioral analytics to change the debt collection process. He was a former member of the CFPB's Consumer Advisory Board and is serving as an advisor for Aspen Institute. Prior to that, Ohad headed fraud analytics for Fraud Sciences, a company that was acquired by PayPal in 2008. After leaving PayPal in 2010, Ohad started two companies, Signified, a leading fraud prevention vendor, and Analyze, which developed fraud prevention and risk management strategies for online retailers and payment platforms. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please type it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. A recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, this event is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. And with that, let's launch into the discussion. First, let's maybe set the table a little bit and talk a little bit about what fintech is and what actually the word means. And maybe, Ohad, you can walk us through that first.
Well, fintech is a generic term. I think just financial technologies have garnered a lot more interest in the venture community in the past decade. And it's an umbrella term for a lot of things. I mean, anything from new payments vendors like Stripe to lenders like LendingClub, to technology providers that provide services to fintech companies and to more traditional financial players. There's a really broad umbrella and definitely something that at least part of it is very relevant for the debt collection industry, either as vendors that we can collect for or as technology providers that we can buy technology from.
Is it more of a buzzword, do you think, at this point, where as opposed to actually being sort of something tangible?
No, I think I kind of chuckled when we talked about the questions and this webinar. Really, for me, asking if fintech is a buzzword is kind of like asking if the internet is a buzzword. It's been around for very long now. It is a fact of the matter. I mean, it's not way beyond a fad. There are technologies that are highly established, that are highly compliant, that there are public companies that have grown from the, call it the fintech sector. There are multiple interesting things to look at. I mean, when you look at something like blockchain and that more, that frontier, that feels a little bit more, the skepticism is warranted. But for fintech in general and technology for financial services, highly established, highly sophisticated, and something we should all be aware of.
Got it. Now, you mentioned that you brought up a few different topics, and there are sort of different terms within fintech, or, you know, sort of within technology. And another one that, you know, that is becoming more popular these days, especially in the collections industry, is artificial intelligence. And I'm wondering, Jonathan, maybe if you could sort of describe what the differences are between, you know, fintech, or sort of compare and contrast fintech and artificial intelligence. Jonathan, I think we lost Jonathan. Matt, can you take that one maybe instead?
Sure. I guess I just assume artificial intelligence is just, you know, machine intelligence, and it's basically teaching a machine how what you would do if you were a human, teaching it to learn and think and make decisions, more importantly, and to achieve some ultimate goal at the end. So, for instance, if we can use artificial intelligence to get somebody into a payment plan by using data and some kind of virtual agent where you don't have a human involved, you just have a machine that's actually doing it, whether it's an IVR or an avatar. It's just using that all that data that you have in your background in order for that payment plan to finalize and materialize, as an example. I guess another example would probably be, you know, back in the day, I guess OCR would be considered back then anyway, artificial intelligence, because you were using the scanner to read characters on paper and then transform it into, you know, readable text. So I don't even know if that's considered AI anymore.
So I guess it's a sort of an evolutionary term that as the technology evolves and grows and expands, sort of what artificial intelligence define or is defined by also changes?
I believe so. I mean, think about when you call in customer service at, you know, your internet carrier, and you get a machine on the other end that says, you know, please tell me a little bit about your call today. Well, it's taking live data, and it's just making decisions on where to route your call based on keywords and phrases, and it has to interpret your speech, you know, whether it's a southern dialect or some kind of heavy accent. It's trying to make decisions. Now, in my case, it doesn't always make the right decisions. I don't think it understands my speech, but I usually get routed to the wrong department or ultimately just keep pressing zero until I get there. But it is emerging, and it's getting better and better. It's no longer that computer simulated voice. I mean, they have really good, for lack of a better term, a speech avatar or something that just sounds more personable and makes better connections real time.
Got it. Thanks. Now sort of honing in on the collections industry, you know, the collections industry has a reputation for being slow to adopt new technologies, especially in the past. Maybe that's changing. And if it is, you can certainly call me out on it. But I was wondering, do you still see that reluctance today, or do you see the industry increasing its acceptance of technology and collections? Oh, and I know what you're going to say. So Matt, I'm going to ask you first this time.
Sure. I think there's, realistically speaking, you're looking at saving costs and making more efficient decisions. And while you want to jump, you want to look before you leap. So for us, you know, we're always looking, but when you're talking about compliance and things like, you're probably going to want somebody else to be the guinea pig first, or some other industry to jump in. Or like, for instance, we're not going to take Bitcoin in 2 weeks. And there's so many other, you know, cryptocurrencies out there. Can I see the future where one day we will accept Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies? Absolutely. I see that in the future. I mean, people are paying on their phone with mobile apps. Nobody wants to talk to a human anymore. So I can see where being cost driven and more efficient and effective in the decision making based on data, I can see the point where especially millennials, they're going to want to pay at a time that's convenient to them and in a way and a method that's convenient to them. And unfortunately, or fortunately, in the times that we're in, that involves usually a mobile device. Nobody wants to get on the phone and actually talk to anybody. They just want to, you know, do some text or open an app and pay like that.
But isn't that sort of the opposite of how collection agencies have long operated? I was reading a profile the other day of an individual who was talking about the agency he works at, and you know, they were talking about technology, and it was like, no, we just make phone calls and send letters. You know, they weren't doing anything like text or email or, you know, online chats or direct drop voicemails or anything like that. So, you know, I still think that there is, and there still does seem to be a reluctance from the industry to adapt and evolve to these new technologies, even though, like you say, you know, individuals are kind of demanding it. So how do you get the industry to sort of catch up?
Well,
do you have any suggestions?
First of all, just to back up a little bit, I do see that there is a reluctance to do it. What I'm saying is, in my opinion, if you don't adapt, and I'm not saying adapt tomorrow, but if you don't adapt to the new technologies and the new preferences in terms of payment and methodology, you're going to get left behind, or you're going to get dusted away by your competition, in my personal opinion. So yes, there's a reluctance, but there's also the crucial need to be able to adapt. And one way to overcome that, I think, is to, as an industry, whether it's collections or banking or whatever, to leverage our lobbyists and leverage our lawmakers and our regulators to update and include in statute or regulations the necessary requirements. I mean, look at TCPA and how far behind we are and how much money is made in that from the trial lawyers. There's an absolute need to get ahead of the game. And for instance, whether it's an industry association, we need to push our lawmakers to make good decisions. And, you know, it's starting to happen, like, for instance, with the turnaround at the FCC. But, you know, who's to say what can happen in 2 years, a change in administration or something like that? It set us backwards. So I think the reluctance is there, but the crucial need to move forward is also there.
Yeah, Mike, I can jump in to offer a different perspective. When we started through Accord 5 years ago, what we pitched and what we continue to pitch is a consumer-facing brand in debt collection, a company that people get to know, think of as their financial services provider, that has a well-known name that is easily Googleable with a well-known number that is easily Googleable, that people can choose to engage on. And you can look at our Google reviews and our Better Business Bureau reviews. They're actually very good. They're like an e-commerce company's reviews, and that's what we were aiming for. I think the compliance discussion is sometimes a cop-out. And I want to point out to people listening, the amount of energy and attempts at innovation to circumvent the ATDS definition for the dialers that agencies are using. Human-triggered calls and direct drop voicemails, and a lot of effort is put into sustaining what was, staying on the phone channel, trying to reach consumers by phone. It is not that the industry cannot adopt technology. It's to some extent that it won't. And I think it uses compliance as a way to justify that. More and more agencies are emailing. More and more agencies are using text messages. More and more email and agencies are using online websites. That is not, that is not an issue if you want to do it. It is not as risky. The industry has realized it is not as risky as once thought. Now, we've had the benefit of doing this for several years with more than 4 million consumers on our platform, a net promoter score of 60. It gives us a different perspective of what it means to be a financial services company that, by the way, does collections and uses machine learning to interact with consumers. I mean, again, going back to the machine learning question, I think a lot of times when you start from a call center, you think of machine learning and technology as a way to automate the process. Instead of consumer agent answering the phone, you have IVR answering the phone. Instead of sending letters, send emails to reduce the cost. Machine learning can be a lot more than that. And machine learning, just to connect it to artificial intelligence, it's a sub area of artificial intelligence. It's one way of teaching a machine how to behave like a human, how to make more data-driven automated decisions. And it is absolutely possible to use machine learning to completely cut out the human from the equation and offer, we think, based on our data, a better service for consumers, a high NPS, high engagement service to consumers that is beyond just sending emails. It is about personalizing to their personal needs on communication channels, communication style, payment offers, and so on. It requires a lot of data, and this is why having started several years ago gives us an edge, but it's not something that's impossible for others to adopt. And I would just encourage everyone to think, what is real and what is inertia? What if we took 50% of the ingenuity and money investment diverted to circumventing the TCPA and put them into new technologies? I think we would make a big leap forward.
Excellent. Appreciate that. That's a great start, and we're going to follow up on that. But at this point, I just want to pause the discussion briefly, and I want to invite Jim Travis from Solutions by Tech to say a few words. Jim?
Hey, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to sponsor this event. So at the end of the day, any form of communication is all about creating a meaningful relationship with your audience. In today's world, now more than ever, businesses must maximize return while minimizing their expenditures. So given that, we feel that texting is a perfect channel in this particular space. With a 93% smartphone penetration in the U.S., which translates to over 7 billion text messages sent each day in this country. Clearly, texting is the preferred method of communication, far and above more than the traditional means of communication. Some additional stats, 98% of text messages are read in 3 minutes or less. And probably the most compelling stat for this particular audience is that 78% of consumers desire to have a text conversation with a business. Now, at Solutions by Text, our business model centers around three big ideas. They are innovation, expertise, and relationship. And where I don't really have time to expound on all three, I do want to touch on one of those ideas. And it's interesting because the conversation up to this point has really been centered around this, and it's around the expertise. So we want you to know that we have a strategic consultative process where we walk alongside our clients and guide them and protect them every step of the way. That process is built on hard-earned knowledge and best practice of the text messaging industry on everything from delivery functionality to the biggest buzz right now, and that is the legal compliance that is around the TCPA and some of the laws and regulations around the FCC. So I invite you to please go to solutionsbytext.com, click on the Let's Talk tab, and submit your contact information. We'll receive your information and we'll contact you to set up a one-hour consulting session to better inform you about our company, but most importantly, better educate you on the laws and regulations around texting your customers. So thanks for the opportunity, Mike, and I'll throw it back to you.
Appreciate it, Jim. Thanks again. Thanks again to Solutions by Text for sponsoring today's webinar. With that, let's sort of pick up our discussion. And Ohad, I wanted to follow up on a couple of the things you said, because I think they were very, very interesting and definitely sort of worth exploring further. Talking about this sort of concept of inertia, Do you think it's maybe not so much inertia as it is if it isn't broke, don't fix it? You know, like the agencies sort of see the recovery rate kind of remaining stable, remaining the same. and they're not adopting new technologies, do you think they're going to need to see some drop in sort of the effectiveness of letters or phones before they kind of pick up and start to look at these other new technologies out there?
I'm not the judge of how people make decisions, but I will let you know. I will tell you this. We've been hearing more and more about contact rates dropping based on robocall task forces and other issues, and we haven't seen a shift. So maybe we need to see a bigger shift than that. Maybe we need to see a new generation in some of the mid-market collection agencies. I don't really know. And I think, to each his own. People have different reasons for making those decisions. But in some cases, I do think it's about inertia, and that inertia, even though phone is not as effective as it used to be.
Yeah, and I'd like to add on that. And again, this is John Harbin. Sorry, I had some AV issues earlier. We're seeing, large drops in RPC rates, exactly what Ohad said. But I think another piece of it is the clients of the agencies not being comfortable with the technology or worrying about their own compliance. So you've got the compliance worries on both ends. And if your client says you can't do it, then you're not going to have a good time. But I think we get that message out to more of the clients as well for that shift to happen.
This is Matt. I'll just add on to that. I'll go back to my first days in the industry. And I remember, we had an automated dialer system, and many agencies didn't. And I remember going to conferences and speaking to people who had been, 20 years already in the industry, and nope, they're still manually dialing, and they believe that the manual dial is better than, a machine that can dial six numbers instead of one at a time. And they were just very late to adapt, because that was the status quo. That's the way it had been. That's the way they were used to. I mean, luckily they had all switched the phones and got rid of their card indexes from way back in the day. But, we embrace the technology. I've always been looking at a newer and better way to build the birdhouse, so to speak. And not that, you want to get out there and get sued right away and try something different just to be first. But I believe if you don't adapt to the changes, you will get left behind, I think, sooner or later.
Well, let's not leave anybody behind now. Jonathan, I want to follow up on what you were talking about in terms of clients. If there's a reluctance from the client, side to adopt new technology, is it sort of a legal reason? Are they just worried about being sued, or do you think there's something else at work there?
Yeah. I mean, most of the clients have told us for the same reasons that most agencies are worried. Compliance is, I think a lot of agencies have made it very clear to their clients that they can't outsource their risk and liability. So that, if the agencies do something that causes a lawsuit, that's quickly going to implicate the client and pull them into lawsuits and litigation. So I think that, they're just as gun shy as the agencies are. Some of them even more so.
I'm going to add to that too. I think one of the biggest tasks that we have as an agency is to educate and continue to educate our clients, because, again, going back to people who've been in, for instance, a hospital setting for the last 20 years, they're just used to doing things a certain way. And we had a particular client that wouldn't allow us to use the automated dialer. And it's just a matter of educating them. They might've been afraid because they heard TCPA or something like that. And it's a matter of educating them to inform them, hey, this is the most lean, most efficient method to contact people. And it's not the way it used to be back in 15 years ago when you heard these complaints coming in. We have link back technology, which will get a live agent, but the dialer is still more efficient. I'm just using that as an example. But when it comes to things like IVR, who doesn't want to be able to take a payment 24/7? And especially if you're a large agency and you're doing collections all over the U.S. or the world, for that matter, you got to be able to reach people in different time zones and can't necessarily be, 9 to 5 or 8 to 8 or whatever time zone you happen to be in or your offices are located in, especially if you have to reach people around the world or you're collecting on internationally.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that I've seen as well is agencies basing their pricing strategies on, you know, especially for these clients that are very against using these new technologies, is to change the rate structure based on efficiencies to reflect that.
So they're charging more or start taking a higher commission if they have to send letters or make calls versus, you know, being able to you know, text or email or things like that?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some agencies that, you know, say if we're not allowed to use our ATDS system or you don't like the compliance of it, then the rate will be, you know, higher.
And from what you know of those agencies, are they still, you know, is it hurting, you know, is it affecting, you know, hurting their business at all?
I think so. And again, it goes back to, you know, first, it starts out with education and informing the clients that, you know, it's not as risky as they might think. But as far as those other agencies, I haven't seen the you know, revenue impacts or anything like that. So I wouldn't know directly.
Are you spending more time educating your clients then on, you know, the new technologies to try and get them over their fears? Is that part of the sales marketing sort of, you know, continued partnership process?
Yeah, definitely. That's a huge initiative for us. And I know it's part of our compliance department and sales, and pretty much anyone who's client facing has been having those conversations.
I'll add to that. I think it absolutely needs to be. You know, the old days, you go visit the client, you go over numbers and that's it, and you leave or go out to lunch or whatever. Nowadays, you got to continuously be informing your client of the changes in industry, especially as quick as it changes, and different decisions across the country, because it can affect them. And I'll give you an example here in Florida. We had an attorney with three letters from the alphabet called, I'll just leave that out, but out of Orlando, well, actually throughout the state, but they were sending clients letters basically threatening to sue them because they were representing the patient, for instance, in a bankruptcy, and a year or 2 years later would go by and they hadn't filed bankruptcy yet. The client sends the account to collections, and then they're, next thing you know, we're getting a lawsuit for violating the bankruptcy stay or something like that, or contacting a consumer who's represented by an attorney, and, you know, they haven't heard from the attorney in a year. Well, this attorney firm was just sending out demand letter after demand letter after demand letter, getting settlements left and right because they didn't want to be sued. What agency, unless you're a larger agency, what agency is going to spend the money over a $50 bill and spend hundreds of dollars? They're just going to try and settle. And this attorney firm knew the low hanging fruit. You know, they knew the sweet spot, you know, $1,500 to $2,500, boom, settlement. And they just filed these things day after day after day. And they did the same thing to our clients.
Yeah, and
I
agree.
You have to fight that.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you have to fight that and educate your clients to prevent them from being sued.
Yeah, no, I agree. And not as much on the compliance topic, but I think that we as the agencies, again, you talked about being a financial partner, that you can also do that through data. No, we've done a lot through, you know, showing data quality from different, you know, healthcare facilities to our clients, letting them know that they have a, you know, front end problem with getting that data. And a lot of them didn't know that and are looking at us to provide that kind of data and insight that, you know, that they would see out of a partner and not just a collection agency.
Oh, I had a question came in, and it was actually a question I was going to ask. Following up on what Jonathan was saying with, in terms of client reluctance to adopt the new technologies, is that something you're seeing as someone who's you know, almost exclusively using these, you know, email and texting and other new technologies and communications with individuals, or are you seeing clients that are more interested in these new types of communication channels?
Yeah, I think as we've presented it to clients, most are receptive to the idea. And one of the first things that we've had to do is work with them to change their intake forms to provide the correct consent. Many have consent that directly references cell phones and calling only. So we've had to work with a couple of those clients, legal, and with our legal as well, to make that language more broad to include text messages and emailing as well.
Yeah, from our perspective, all major banks are open to technology and debt collection. Maybe not texting, but you know, push notifications are very easily, you can very easily show consent, chat messages, WhatsApp, you know, targeted phone calls, emails, a website, and so on. These are all pretty much in the zone for the major financial institutions. And if there is a client, I mean, it's well known that we are relying on technology. We're a technology-based company. So we don't, if somebody just wants to hammer consumers on the phone or to sue them, they just, you know, they just don't work with us. But in terms of the availability in the market, it's just there. The banks are there, the telcos are there, the debt buyers are there. So yeah, we're not seeing any objection, any meaningful objection.
Yeah, and of course, our company being, you know, 100% healthcare, I think everybody knows healthcare a lot of times is way behind the other industries when it comes to technology. So I think that's why we've seen it as a big struggle here, whereas others in other industries may not be as bad.
And I'll just add to that, because we're also probably 98% healthcare, but, you know, I think from my perspective, our client's expectation can be summed up in two sentences, and that's just show me the money and keep me safe. You know, they don't have the resources to chase after this themselves. They're outsourcing it to us for a reason, and the expectation is that we will bring in the money for them and not get them sued.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So does that mean, Matt, that there isn't really a reluctance as long as you're keeping them safe, or are they, you know, to use other forms of technology? Is it just you have to provide them with some sort of assurance? I mean, how is that communication sort of take place?
Well, for instance, I mean, we work with our clients on their guarantor agreement. Like you said, if the ATDS language is in there, you know, we're doing the texting, we're emailing them, we're getting permission from them. We got permission all over our, you know, our website panels and stuff. If they email us, we do proactive texting. So the person has to actually initiate the text to us. And we inform our clients of this when we're in their face of, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but we're in front of the client, whether it's monthly or quarterly, we're discussing what we're doing, how we're collecting. And they're asking, you know, we've seen collections go up, you know, what's going on, or what are you seeing on your end? At the same time, we'll communicate back, you know, collections is down and we noticed some issues with your data. You know, you're missing social security numbers, or you're not sending us date of birth and social security numbers anymore. What happened? And conveying that back, because as you know, if you credit report, you need one or the other to be able to credit report the account. So that can affect collections. So it's continuously educating your client, giving them the data trends and things that you're noticing and you're in, and being a true business partner and not just another vendor that they can go, you know, to the next HFMA conference and pick another one because they're not happy for some reason or another.
Is that part of the pitch that you're making a true accord, OHAD? Is the notion of a true business partnership?
Absolutely. Look, when you have a fully instrumented, predominantly digitized, data-driven platform, there's a lot more that you can do in terms of partnering with the client, running complex strategies, really looking at how the consumers respond to different offer strategies and contact strategies, and modifying them according to the client's sophistication, what they're interested in seeing. Some clients choose to send all failed payment plans to TrueAccord because we can reactivate people on payment plans much easier. We run experiments on length of placement and length of payment plan offered and the settlement authority offered to consumers or offer to us to offer to consumers, because a lot of it has been historically optimized for the call center, where you have to take accounts after 3 months and re-age them or replace them with another agency so that they get called a lot again. And in our case, the system doesn't get tired, it doesn't get angry, and it doesn't fixate on whether it's making its numbers or not. It just continues to work with the consumer. So there's a lot more opportunity to partner around not only new channels and how to use them in an effective way for the consumers, but also on data-driven strategies and offer strategies. So that is definitely a major selling point. I mean, at the end of the day, we get in because people believe that they need to move to a more digital-first strategy. That's why they give us a shot. They keep us in because of the results, but they also enjoy the partnership and the ability to rethink their whole placement strategy based on our capabilities.
Got it. Sorry, just trying to keep up with my notes. Okay. So we've kind of been talking sort of mostly communication in terms of the technologies, but Matt, I'm curious, I'd like to get your perspective outside of a collection system, or maybe some of the things we've talked about before, what other technologies do you consider to be a must-have within a collection agency today?
Well, I can see the need for, well, for instance, we've just integrated something new, a company called Pay Near Me, where there's an underserved market out there, people who either don't have credit, can't obtain credit, or for whatever reason choose not to get a credit card, but they want to pay their bill. So Pay Near Me, and I don't work for Pay Near Me, so I'm just throwing this out there because it's a vendor that we partnered with. Pay Near Me integrated with our, at our request, integrated with our payment processor, Repay. And what it is basically the patient, in this case, gets a barcode either on the letter or sent to their phone, and they can go into a CVS or a 7-Eleven and pay their bill. And then the money goes straight to the bank, comes into our system, and updates. We're on Interpros, but we update the software, you know, real time. I say real time. The patient may pay today at 7-Eleven. That file list coming from Repay goes to the bank in the overnight hours and then updates our system with the correct balance. And, you know, they can walk in there with their smartphone and just pay the bill. Things like Bitcoin, things like Apple Pay or Google Pay, I can see the need for that because that's what consumers are going to go to, or what they're used to seeing. They want name brand stuff that's going to make them feel safe, like Apple or Google, and they're going to want to pay at a time and manner that's convenient to them. So it's absolutely necessary that we start thinking of these things, but also think about, you know, how are we protecting ourselves? Consent, language that needs to be out there, verbiage, you know, and all the different acronyms in terms of compliance, PCI, ESS, you know, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, and to add on to that a little bit, I mean, I think it boils down to making it as easy as possible for the consumer to pay. I'll throw out another vendor that we've kind of been looking at that does exactly that. I think it's called Pineapple Payments. And just like before, I don't work for Pineapple Payments. But yeah, I mean, you can take a picture of the bill that you get in the mail, and it you know, has all your credit card and payment methods on file, and we'll go pay that bill for you. Either they'll, you know which website to go to and automatically pay that bill. There's a lot of integration there, obviously, and I'm assuming it doesn't work for everything off the bat. But, you know, that's exactly what we have to do is make it easier for the consumer to pay any way possible.
And just to add to that, I think it's really, well, I see this happening. It's already happening with our vendor, and you know, we're excited about it because of the direction it's taken us. But, you know, your collection software and its ability to integrate with anybody you want to choose to do partner with in terms of a service provider, merchant processor, you know, that ability to integrate. You know, the old days it was, oh, we got to do an interface for this one, and it, you know, it takes a lot of time and stuff. But I guess it's API interface, API network, so that your collection vendor, you can plug and play anybody you want and change it if necessary on a dime. I think it's absolutely necessary to have your whatever collection software you have, be able to integrate with anybody you want to bring to the table in order to make it more convenient for the consumer to pay their bill.
Jonathan, you said that you were looking at that service. Is that something that you think you're going to end up signing on? I mean, where are you sort of in the process, and what do you think of it so far?
I know that our COO is working with them and wants to do a trial and make sure that we're available on that platform. And I'm constantly reaching out to these new startups and making sure that we're compatible with what they're doing.
Got it. I'm curious, let's look forward on the horizon, crystal ball, choose your analogy, your metaphor, and I'll start with you. What do you see sort of in terms of the future for collections industry in terms of new technology? Where do you think the industry's headed?
Yeah, I think to go on a little bit earlier, APIs and integrations directly with client systems, I think that's a huge sore spot for the entire industry right now, is being able to easily integrate with clients that have very different data requirements and having to maintain an internal staff that does all these data transformations. Moving more towards real-time APIs, and not just with clients, but with vendors. I see that as the way forward for pretty much anything fintech.
I don't know exactly where the industry is going as a whole, and I really hope it's in the direction of being more consumer focused with contact strategy and offer strategies. But where I want to see this whole industry going is into being a financial services industry that's focused on customer service and consumer engagement using modern technologies. We need to meet consumers where they are. We need to present to them tools in context when they look at their credit report, when they're trying to buy a house, when they're trying to manage their finances for the coming month. We need to offer them payment plans that are as flexible as their lives are. We need to give them interactions that are as flexible as their timelines are, where they come back home after a double shift and they want to look at their finances and they want to figure out their debt and maybe they want to make an advance payment. We need to give them the flexibility that they need to fit their lives, and we need to be there when they fall to pick them up so that they improve their financials over time and are able to get out of the cycle of debt and maybe into a better life. That should be our perspective. And we need to move away from the legacy that puts us there. And us, TrueCore as a company, again, going back to our founding story, we're committed to being that consumer-facing brand, a company that people can trust when they are in debt collection. They can identify with, they can trust, they can say, because of their online reputation, I know to the extent that they can, they have my back and they're going to give me the treatment that I want to be given. I think that's what's driving our success overall.
I'll add to that. Just a couple things I'd love to see. And to some extent, this is there already, but maybe not the full capability. For instance, if you're scoring accounts, you're getting different, you're getting data, you're getting a score, you're looking for propensity to pay. But, having an IVR or a virtual agent or even an avatar that is making payment plan decisions based on score and based on all these different factors that you can get, store in your system, and make decisions on, the right payment plan to suggest, or whether the person can pay more, or in some cases, in the hospital case, maybe it's making a charity recommendation based on the data that it has, and then updates to that data over time. Because in the patient world, in collections, that patient is coming back to bad debt again and again and again over the years. Other things I'd like to see from a compliance perspective would be preventing call baiting, for instance, listening to key phrases, and then a pop-up screen, presents a warning or flashes a manager screen that there's some words, keywords, and phrases being used that this call might be a baiting call that your collector is actually taking. And then insurance verification, where the person, if you want to update your insurance information, or it was wrong or not billed properly, the person can either key in or talk about their insurance group plan, group number, whatever. And in real time, that data goes out to, a database out there, and it verifies real time that insurance information. and then send you back a file or whatever so that that claim can be rebilled or appealed or sent with the correct information in order to get it corrected and paid. Those are, I mean, those are just some things I can see from an IVR or a virtual agent type perspective where you're basically eliminating a collector and it's just more efficient and it's time and it's something that your consumer, I think, would the patient would appreciate.
Yeah, and building on that, the AI a little bit there too, I think that, you know, you mentioned propensity to pay as well. And one thing we're looking into, and I'm sure others are as well, but there's a lot of room there is, you know, using that propensity to pay and AI to create adaptive communication strategies. You know, a person's 90 years old and has a hospital bill and lives in the rural area, you know, is going to want more letters and phone calls versus the 20-year-old in New York City who's going to want more texts and emails. And using AI to use that score to build your adaptive strategies as to what letters, phone calls, texts, emails should be sent and when for the best results.
That's a very good point, especially, you know, the person last paid on a Wednesday at 2 p.m. versus your dialer trying to call them at 8 a.m. for the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks getting a hold of them. Well, if the data is in your system of when they paid, what day they paid, the time of day, and they're a repeat patient again and again, and you're seeing payments on some accounts and not others, AI could actually get you to the point where your dialer calls at the right time, the right day, and you have a higher likelihood of success.
Matt, you mentioned, you know, sort of efficiency and, you know, IVRs and, you know, the virtual agents. And I wanted to ask you, do you see sort of a reduction in, you know, human capital being, you know, one of the greatest opportunities for fintech or for technology to have an impact on collections?
Oh, I think absolutely your technological solutions are going to be cheaper than human capital and probably be a whole lot more efficient. When you have to work leaner and you have to be more compliant, you know, if you're teaching a machine the rules, the business rules to make, they're going to less likely prone to error and make mistakes. So, you know, absolutely, I think you're able to do more with less, at least less human capital in these days with the use of AI and, you know, good data and tools to accomplish that.
Yeah, I think that's something we've looked into as well, and definitely other industries I've already seen using it heavily. We've really struggled in the healthcare industry as it tends to be more customer service focused and a lot longer conversations, especially around insurance and things like that, where virtual agents haven't kept up as well. But it's something we're definitely keeping an eye on, or perhaps scoring the type of call and filtering it towards a live agent or virtual agent, depending on the question being asked, things like that. We've just found some struggles with the customer service aspect and virtual agents, but it's only going to get better.
Agreed.
I like your optimistic attitude, Jonathan. There's collection agencies, and this has been mentioned, I think, a couple of times already. Collection agencies have a tremendous amount of data in their systems. And, you know, sort of being able to effectively analyze that data, I think, is something that is, you know, not really considered a priority or not really something that's well understood within collection agencies. And I'm wondering, you know, Jonathan, you know, as the CIO, how do you sort of take all of that data that a collection agency has and try to sort of manipulate it, evaluate it, you know, put it through some sort of system so that it actually spits out, hey, you should call this person at this time?
Yeah, it's something that we're building internally ourselves. I'm sure most people on the call know that anybody with the title of data scientist doesn't come cheap. So that's one of the larger struggles, but you know, it's an emerging field, and there are some tools out there, not specifically for our industry, but can be adapted. Things like Tableau and MicroStrategy, where you can throw in large data sets, and it will use some built-in machine learning and AI to point out correlations or oddities, you know, in that data, which is, that's where you start. And then at that point, you can kind of grow the team from there and get more custom with the tools. But I really haven't seen anyone, you know, focusing on the collection industry with that type of tool. And some other kind of tools I've seen too, some websites, Kaggle, for instance, where companies will dump data sets securely, we hope, onto this website and will pay for the best answers. I know, for instance, the airlines have been using it to dump a data set in there and then say, you know, tell me the most efficient way to plan my flights and routes. And whoever comes up with the best answer gets, you know, gets paid. So I would think that that's something the collection industry, we should be looking at. And I know I've discussed it internally with our company, and everyone's afraid to share your data or put it up on the web, things like that, just from the security issues. But tools like that and insight into the data, you know, starts with a tool showing you some of the insights and then a, you know, team from there to customize it.
Got it. Thanks. Well, we're running out of time. We've only got a few minutes left. We do have a few questions that have come in here. And let's see, let's try and get through these. With respect to texting and the need for consent within the TCPA, because texts are considered calls, as if they were, you know, phone calls. Can anyone speak to whether consent is transferable from clients to collection agencies? How do you sort of address that need for consent to start texting without, you know, maybe without necessarily maybe having that consent?
This is Matt. I'll respond real quickly. I got to jump on an ACA call here in a minute, but we started texting by having the consumer initiate the text to us, and it basically was just a link to our payment portal. We've just recently started to take our clients that have a consent to call a cell number. We're using an ATDS. We've started proactively sending a text message to the patient with the opt-in and opt-out message and then handling the results. And that's something new that we started with our dialer vendor, TCN, and we've just started to do that. We've been doing another one for about, gosh, maybe 8 months, where the patient or the consumer initiates the text. The other one we've just started, and but that's something we're dabbling in right now. But basically, if consent to call a cell phone number is in the guarantor language, and our client passes that to us, we will do the one-time text message to them, or at least that's our future intent.
Okay. With respect to having a consumer or an individual work out a payment plan, maybe not with a live collector, but with a virtual agent or via chat or some other method, can anyone speak to the percentage, you know, in terms of payment plans, how many sort of succeed versus fall short when doing it with a live collector versus something more digital or electronic? No one has any insights into that. Okay, that's fine.
No numbers, not from my perspective. We don't have any numbers.
Anecdotally, have you seen anything, or can you speak to it?
Well, if the patient goes online and pays on our payment portal and it goes directly to ACE, which is our collection software through Interpros, we get what's called a virtual agent fail report, and we work those the next day. I haven't looked at the data. I know the numbers initially when I was getting it, it wasn't big, but with it being used more and more, that's something they basically handle manually. And it could be as simple as a drop connection, bad internet, or the person pressed the wrong button. Or they tried to enter into a payment arrangement that the business rules were not set up for, like, you know, an extended payment plan, $25,000 bill, and they want to pay $50 a month, and that doesn't meet our rules. It exceeds it. It would fail the payment plan. So then we would have to manually follow up on that. But again, the ones that are successful, you've eliminated a human agent, and the cost of what you're paying people on your floor.
Do any of the panelists use e-signature for accepting payment plans and taking future payments?
Yes, well, we do that, and we do it through email and consent for payment plans and Reg E compliance. You know, by going to our payment portal and signing up for a pay plan, we'll then send them an email that they have to agree to and respond to that email for the payment plan to be established. And then, you know, meeting the Reg E requirements of sending out those reminder emails before deposits are taken as well.
Excellent. Well, we've almost run out of time, but before we let everybody go back to their regularly scheduled work, what I'd like to do is ask each of the panelists to share any parting thoughts, a summary of what they talked about today, or sort of reinforce the most important thing that they want people to walk away from. Maybe just sort of take a minute and offer some concluding remarks, And Ohad, I'd like you to go first.
Yeah, so one quick concluding remark, which I've heard from folks who are listening to the webinar as well, reflecting, we're talking a lot about our needs as collection agencies and the clients wanting to get paid and not be sued. My parting thought is, where is the consumer in this equation? How do we think of ourselves long-term as focused on the consumer relationship, the consumer brand, serving the consumer effectively? I would suggest that based on our data and what we're seeing for TuraCord in the last 5 years, that focus on delighting the consumer, offering a unique user experience they can connect with and a brand that they can connect with is making a significant difference in performance, in reduction in claims, and just the ability to utilize technology and to get the positive response from consumers.
Got it, thanks. And Matt, I know you've got to go, so we'll let you go next.
Sure, I'd just like to encourage everybody on the call to stay active in your associations, and if you're not active, get active, because I think in the end of the day, we really need to push our lawmakers and our regulators to update and stay current with changes in technology so that as we move forward with AI and fintech solutions that it's there for us and it's not something we're just going to have to wait years to start using and just be proactive rather than reactive.
Well put. Jonathan, the last words are yours.
Yeah, and I think tying both of those together, really, we're a partner to the client and the consumer, and if we're not, providing that customer service to the consumer, then the client's not going to view us as a partner either. So it's got to be viewed more as a partnership and these tools that we're bringing to the table to help out both parties.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank Matt, Jonathan, and Ohad for their insights and their time today. I really appreciate them taking the opportunity to talk about something that's fairly kind of esoteric, but still incredibly important in sharing some perspectives that we don't normally hear a lot of here in the ARM industry. So really appreciate that. I also want to thank Solutions by Text for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to solutionsbytext.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who listened and submitted questions and participated today. A recording of today's event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net's webinar recordings page in the next few days. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and webinars in the very near future. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.